It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
Let me come in.
Oh, come on in, Swag. Water's warm in here, buddy.
Come on in.
Dirt and Sprague.
I'm going to configure your widget.
I'm all alone over here. I feel like I'm in the corner watching right now.
It's breakfast time.
Hey. Swag's going to go configure Dirt's widget. Oh, my Lord.
Dirt and Sprague.
He configured both our widgets.
Oh, buddy.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Down at our Rumble Food. Through Discovery 2.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number two. Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and what we like to call the Fan Sports Network. Good morning. Hello. Thank you, everybody, hanging out with us on the old YouTubes. Thanks for hanging with us on the Odyssey app. Some people are still old school classic 1080 AM.
I know.
I found out one of our P1s, Greg, yesterday, still 1080 AM guy.
Yeah.
And then, of course, 105.1 The Fan. A lot to get to in the second hour. Got a lot of college football on the old docket today. We have done, as a show, and largely, I'll give Dirt a lot of credit on this, I could fall into the basketball trap, the little honeypot that they set out for us. Dirt's always really good at diving in and going, shoot, said about my Ducks? You want to make fun of the Huskies? Like, no, but all right, here we are. We're doing it. But we got a lot of college football.
Well, we'll make fun of the SEC.
This is the one area, look, he does not miss doing the show today. He's golfing. Dirt is out today. He's golfing at some swanky, posh country club in Eugene, Oregon, and him and the Brahmin, oh, we have to miss work today. Shake hands and kiss babies. You know, their lives are so hard. This is actually a day of topics in college football. He literally lives for this.
He loves the petty.
And I hate to tell him, this will not be a topic in any way Monday. It's over. You've missed your window to talk about kick times. He loves early lines, and he loves kick times.
Exactly.
He lives for those things.
And we have bulletin board material.
And we have bulletin board material. Do we? Am I missing something?
Sankey stuff, yeah. For the rest of college football.
Yeah, sure, okay.
You sanctimonious blowhard.
Yeah, so he's going to miss some of the stuff he joneses for, but his life is difficult today. He's got to hit those balls straight at his posh country club.
Well, the most difficult part was, getting clearance from the wifey to spend all day.
You think that was hard? You had that being hard?
He might have had to sell that a little bit.
I don't think he does. I think he, for every IKEA not buying trip he invests in,
yeah,
I think she gives three versions of those back to him.
Oh, okay.
I think he's got a good setup, a good arrangement.
All right.
But a lot to get to in the second hour of the show. Want to remind you, though, before we get going here.
Yes.
June 23rd.
June 23rd.
Toyota presents the Fan Golf Classic out at Langdon Farms. Now, the afternoon round has been sold out.
It's been sold out for a while.
Been sold out for a while.
We're waiting. I have not received word.
If it's happened.
No email, no
somebody
text.
Somebody dropped the ball. We have one foursome left.
One.
In the morning. One.
Let's move that today.
Let's get that thing out of here. Text your buds. Text your boss. Text your wife and her. I don't care who you text.
Text your client meeting.
Yes, make it an event. It is an event. The Fan Golf Classic has been going for a long time now, and we're excited to be out at Langdon Farms. We'll be all hanging out there on the infamous Angels Envy Bourbon Par 3 6th hole. We'll all be eating Matt's Barbecue together, so there you go. There's another sell point there. You're hungry. You're going to golf. It's going to be a beautiful day. Let's get some Matt's Barbecue. Head to 1051thefan.com and click on the Fan Golf Classic logo for info and to sign up today. Fan Golf Classic, presented by Toyota, is also brought to you by Vulcan Design and Construction, Henderson and Daughter Windows and Doors, George McCoy at Warren Allen Attorneys at Law, Battery Exchange, Maestro Dobel Tequila, Laura Hurst Market Steakhouse and Butcher Shop, Philbrook Law, 1-800-DIVORCE, Roto-Rooter, Illegal Mezcal, Pub Beer, Cheap Fun, and Window Nation. How's that power bar treating you as I hear a rapper being done?
Sorry.
That's okay. You never wait to the breaks. You do everything when we're on the air.
I'm trying to do all the producer stuff in the breaks. Hunt down NFL OTA audio for you.
That's okay. It's all right. I totally get it. You can chew. You don't need to tell us while you're chewing. I get it. It's early morning.
Little chocolate chip cookie dough power bar right there.
Do you feel – okay, let me ask you this. I'm delaying a little college football here, and I want to get to it, but you've just taken my brain a different way.
It's okay.
Are you familiar who Robert Irvine is? Does that name ring a bell to you?
Yeah, Food Network. Yeah. He was a former military guy, got a British accent.
Huge guns.
Yeah, ginormous guns, yes.
He does the restaurant impossible thing. He makes a
big fan of Robert
restaurant.
Irvine.
Me too. In fact, famously, Robert Irvine did a restaurant in the Dalles years ago. And my step-grandpa was a line cook at the time.
Oh, wow.
And it was a big deal in the family group chat. Hey, he's on Restaurant Impossible. Yep. You got to tune in tonight. And he's in it for maybe all of a minute. But it's when he brings the whole staff together and basically is like, your restaurant sucks. We're going to revamp it. And I'm going to bench press the whole building. And I like the show. I think he's good. Anyways, he has a line of power protein bars.
Oh.
And they sell them at Costco. And let me ask you this. The reason you got my gears going on.
Yeah.
I love the mint chocolate flavor. Now, I've looked at everything, and it doesn't have, it's not loaded with sugar. It's loaded with about, I don't know, 20 grams or 25 grams
protein.
Whatever
usually,
it is.
Yeah, 20.
But when I eat it, it tastes just like a candy bar.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're lying to us that these things are actually just doused in sugar, even though they don't say they have a ton of it. Do you eat that and go, this tastes like a candy bar more than a protein bar?
It does. However, having researched and obviously the keto stuff, monk fruit, if you find stuff that's the sweetener is monk fruit based,
monk fruit's
actually sweeter than sugar.
Really?
Yes.
But it's supposed to be healthier for you, right?
Yes, there's no calories in it.
Yeah, there you go. So if you have monk fruit in it, I guess you're okay.
So yeah.
But his bar is delightful. I just eat it, and I'm like, this tastes like I'm eating a candy bar.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm really buying how healthy it is for me, but I still dabble.
Of course.
Let's get to the kick times in college football.
Yes.
Let's start with my Beavs.
Okay, let me pull it up. Yeah, we just
have
got
right here.
Basically almost the entire schedule.
So here is the schedule. Are you ready? Are you writing this down? On September 5th, they're at Houston, 9 a.m. local kick, ESPN. So we got a little big nooner here for Oregon State as they're on the road returning to Houston. Houston famously was kind of getting beat up by them last year in Reser, which is kind of the story of their season, how many games they choked away. Now they return to Houston for the home-and-home, 9 a.m. our time, ESPN. Okay, good access point. Second game, home game. Here comes playoff hopeful, and maybe, we'll have to wait and see on this, Brendan Sorsby, known gambling addict, but also known really good quarterback, and Texas Tech coming in, Joey McGuire, 4:30 Pacific kick, CBS.
Great exposure.
We're off to a rip-roaring start.
Yep.
Game 3, September 19th, home against the Fighting Bill Orams, Montana Grizzlies coming back. I'll say this, Bill Orams is going to be on the show tomorrow. People have wanted me to rip a new one on Bill Orams. So I'm going to rip a new one on Mr. Move the Team. But I'm also going to tell him, I don't know if he's allowed to cover this game. He openly wears Montana gear. He openly brags about being a Grizzly alum. I don't know how unbiased he's going to be covering this game. I'm going to question the journalism to Bill Orham tomorrow.
I think if he's going to do a column or something on this, I think he should do it from first-person perspective, opposing fan now going to Reser.
That's a great idea.
Okay, how intimidated are we by being in a new conference? Do they seem, you know?
Okay.
Do it that way.
I like that.
And, you know, give us the, you know, keep track of the beers and those sorts of things. But, yeah, I would do it as a first-person opposing fan perspective on the new and hopefully improved Oregon State football program.
Well, this one's going to be a Pac-12 way after dark.
Way after dark.
This is an 8 p.m. game, but it's going to be on USA Network.
Yeah, so USA is part of the new TV deal with the new and improved Pac-12, 8, whatever it is.
This is where you will lose me. I don't know if they have trial runs, but I'm just going to tell you right now, on the outside looking in, I will not watch this game. They're at UTEP on September 26th, 6 p.m., good kick time, Mountain West Plus.
Yeah, that's their.
Will I watch that?
You'll have to go to.
I'm not signing up.
It's a stream. No, yeah, it's free.
It's free.
Yeah, the Mountain West, the Mountain West app or whatever it is free. You can go to YouTube and find it.
It's ridiculous. I had to watch them at App State last year on the ESPN Plus app.
I'm boycotting because I don't want anything to do with El Paso anymore.
Oh, touche.
Yeah.
You're not going to watch because you've been to El Paso twice?
Three times.
That's why you're not going to watch?
Yeah.
I thought the ESPN Plus experience was terrible. They had the App State broadcasters doing the game. It was very, the camera quality was awful.
Yeah.
This one, 6 p.m. kick at UTEP.
I think the Mountain West Network at least has.
Well, it's Mountain West Plus. That's what I'm saying. Is like, it's kind of shaky.
Okay.
October 3rd at Colorado State, 3 p.m. kick on USA Network. So nice little window there. October 10th, San Diego State, 3 p.m. USA Network at home. October 17th, Washington State at home, 3 p.m. USA Network. So 4 of your 7 games so far on USA. You're then a bye. And then on Halloween, they're at Fresno State. Now, this one's a shifty 4 p.m. or 8 p.m. game, USA Network. Texas State at home on November the 7th, 7:30 kick, the CW. Boise State on November 14th. They're at Boise State, 3 p.m. USA Network. And then Utah State at home, 7:30 kick, and that looks like CBS Sports Network. My biggest takeaway from this before we get to Oregon, really good exposure. I know USA.
Easy to find.
Very easy to find
all the games,
90%
but
of
one.
These games. Yeah.
There's one game you got to go searching for.
We're very familiar with CBS Sports Network at this point.
Yeah.
It's not a foreign channel.
No.
But you're opening ESPN, CBS, and then USA, say what you want about it having a college football
USA,
game.
If you have...
It's most bundles.
Basic cable.
Hulu, if you have YouTube, yeah. You have cable, satellite,
that
USA is included
accessible
in all.
As any regular cable channel.
Exactly. So that was kind of my big takeaway. You know, kick times, the 8 p.m. kick, that's a little brutal. I'm not a big fan of that as a morning show host. But an 8 p.m. kick, other than that, good like kick windows, good channel access. That's all you want to see. How accessible are your games? It was a big concern for them, I think, going into the media rights deal. And now that they've kind of figured some of that out, and we still haven't got numbers on that, by the way, it makes sense, and it looks very accessible. That's all fans, I think, in sports.
And it's going to be nationwide access.
Yeah.
Like if people are...
Even the CW game, say what you want about it. CW's
everywhere.
But if
you're just channel surfing, you want to watch a game, what's going on, I'm looking for something, people can stumble across it.
On the other side of the coin, we've got the Oregon Duck kick times. Now, not all of them. A lot of flexibility going on, I think, in the B1G.
Yeah, they will, because they have all the different networks that have, so they will have their non-conference games.
Yes.
And then they'll start doing the draft as we get closer to the season.
So they'll open the season, obviously, against Boise State. The Broncos coming back into Autzen Stadium, where they almost pulled off the upset a couple years ago. On September 5th, that is a 12:30 Pacific time game on CBS.
I think that's ideal.
I think it's great. I've always thought that's a perfect kick window. I know some people like it a little later for more tailgating purposes, but I believe that's the same window they whooped Oklahoma State's ass in, right?
Yeah, and that's an opening weekend. You're a little bit more excited. You can go down, make a day out of it. Monday will be Labor Day. So you've got an extra day. So if you want to stay in Eugene afterwards, go to a sports bar, hang out, tailgate afterwards, watch the other games, do all that stuff, take your time.
They then go to Oklahoma State on September 12th. And this one's a bright and early 9 a.m. our time kick, 11 a.m. Central time. Kickoff, though, ESPN.
ESPN.
That's a delightful little game.
Game will probably be over about 9:25 a.m.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
You don't think Oklahoma State's going to be in any way better?
They might be, but it's still a new program, a new coach, all those sorts of things.
What did you know about Kurt Cignetti? Why are you doing that? We act like these teams don't bring in like 40 new guys if they need to.
I understand, but where did they all come from?
Where did Indiana guys come from?
A winning program in JMU with their coach.
Where was North Texas last year? Were they 0-for?
That's true.
What do you mean that's true? That's how this coach got that job. What do you mean?
I know.
Why are you poo-pooing it?
I just think
they lost 69-3. Are they going to get that? Are they going to get worse than that?
No.
I'm not saying Oregon's going to lose. They probably won't. I'd probably bet Oregon to win by 14 or more. But actually, this game's done in 20 minutes. That's a little bit of a stretch, is it not? A 9 a.m. local? How did they play last time at Northwestern 9 a.m. kick? They were sluggish.
That's true.
Northwestern kind of sucked.
That game was screwy, though. I think this will be. I mean, it'll be 11. Yeah. The Northwest. That
You're
Northwestern.
You're pooing this game pretty big.
I am.
Wow.
I think it'll be over by 9:30.
What is the kid's name? Mestamaker?
Yeah.
I mean, what if he just dials it up? Brandon Finney, you have nothing to worry about, huh? All right.
I think they'll be licking their chops.
Okay. Licking their chops for what? They beat them 69-3. Like, how can you lick your chops when you've already eaten against them? I'm not saying they won't win. I would bet that they will win. I'm not worried about the loss. It's the, what time did you say? 9:25?
9:25.
I'm going to write that down
there
right
you go.
Now. I'm putting on a show sheet. We do these post-it takes.
Yeah.
We have a couple already in the studio. I'm going to write right now on May 28th, Swag, Oregon, Oklahoma State, games done by 9:25. Now, if you think Oregon's going to win going away, certainly the position should be technically you're kind of right, but if it's like 7-7 in the first quarter, you're wrong.
That's true.
So we'll have to wait and see on that one. 9 a.m. kick on ESPN. We have a Friday night game. I don't know how people feel about this one.
This will be tough because you're early in the high school football season too.
It's a Friday night Portland State game, September 18th. 7:30 kick on the Big Ten Network.
Yeah.
You want to talk about games? 7:30 kick? This game's over by 7:55. You want to talk about games? I will probably not be watching the second half of this game.
No.
And he will. And
is your nephew still
it's
playing?
It's his senior season.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to Nelson after the show today because I'm doing some stuff there.
There you go.
I'm hoping to see him. He's trying to gain weight.
Yeah.
He's playing middle linebacker. As I get older, I'm starting to become a little
curmudgeon
about Friday
night games. I don't mind Friday night games later on in the season.
But early, it's kind of tough.
Early, yeah, it's week two or three.
The weather's usually exceptional here, too. So it's like,
yeah,
do I want to watch you play Portland State?
I want to be outside on a great, see the sunset going down as second quarter kicks going.
The sunset at Nelson, they stupidly made the stands in the sun.
Yeah.
But like when it sets at Nelson, it's beautiful to look at. And it's a senior season, so this is definitely a game that, like, I probably have on my cell phone.
Yeah.
And I don't watch the second half because they're up 35-0 at halftime. Let's see. We got
they set the Michigan State. That's their other Friday game.
Friday, November 20th, 5 o'clock our time on Fox. And I don't know, is that another game that's over by 5:25?
Who knows at that point?
Really? Michigan State was dog crap last year.
I know.
But that game's open?
That could be a weather game.
Oh, I like that hunch.
You could have
November
snow.
20th.
You could have snow going on. I mean, that's 8 p.m. in East Lansing the week before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be weird weather stuff.
Should also be noted, I'm reading the Oregon announcement. Oregon and Baylor mutually agreed to cancel its home-and-home series in 27 and 28. I'm assuming that has partially to do with the Oregon State.
I think partially. I think they wanted to move one for 28, and then Baylor said, well,
we don't want just one,
and we're certainly not doing a one-off coming only to Eugene, so they're gonna backed out of it.
And they added a home game against Coastal Carolina on September 11th in 2027.
Now, that might be fun. The Chanticleers coming all the way out to Autzen.
Mm. You're a very bizarre observer of the schedule.
Yeah.
The Oklahoma State game is done in 10 minutes. That game's fun.
Well, I think for the Chanticleers, that's a huge deal.
Well, for them, it's everything, right?
Yeah.
Is Oregon worried about Coastal Carolina?
I don't know. They're one of those teams that always comes around. Has the same coach been there for a while? Was that our they're an interesting bunch.
You have a fun way of looking at college football.
I do.
I'm kind of excited about the 9
a.m. I want to make it fun.
Oklahoma State game, and you're poo-pooing it. It's no big deal. Yeah. All right, there's your schedule, your kick times, Oregon State fans, basically, you have everything ready to set up, and Oregon's got most of it. Obviously, still have a big chunk of your Big Ten games.
There'll be some griping about those 7:30 kicks late at home in November.
Yeah, I mean,
Corvallis can be a little foggy and cold.
Corvallis?
Yeah.
Yeah, the 7:30 games, Utah State and Boise, Texas State. Yeah, I'm with you there. 8 o'clock is, even though the weather should be better at that point, 8 o'clock sucks. That's a super late kick.
Well, I think that's the that might be the weekend before classes start.
I think you might be right on that.
So the students all being coming in and having it a late night, like that might have more of a little party atmosphere than 7:30 in November against Texas State.
Well, from kick times to staying in college football, one AD quite pissed with his kick time and schedule release, and Greg Sankey, we're still the best. Never mind who wins the national championship. We'll get to that coming up next on The Fan. Hey, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan. We've got NFL to get to. Check in on some OTA audio. A couple stops in the National Football League. We'll talk some NFL. The defending champions are running it forward. So we'll talk with Brady Henderson coming up at 9:30. We got the Magic Hat to dive into coming up at 9. I have confirmed, unfortunately. Now, look, I don't buy them very often because of everything I just said. I have been confirmed via a Yuka rated app that indeed the protein bar I was just alluding to, the Fit Crunch bar.
Yes.
It's not rated very high in the protein bar scale.
Ah.
But I will say, for all the saturated fats it provides me, I'm willing to take that on, then eat that Kirkland. Have you eaten the Kirkland protein bars that are in the shiny wrap? Oh,
no.
My God. Those are terrible.
Mm.
I'm usually a big Kirkland boy.
Yeah.
Like, I like what Kirkland does.
Yeah.
Those protein bars are the worst. They're disgusting. I have two boxes in a pantry. I'm never going to eat them. But I have also too much shame to throw them out. So I think they're just going
to
sit there for
You haven't been able to slough them off on your kids yet?
No, my kids eating protein bars is already pulling teeth. They want to eat those ones. Swag, they're gross. They taste like old Play-Doh. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're that kind of consistency. It's disgusting. Let's roll on with college football as we just talked about the kick times. I got NFL again on the notes. And I want to dive into something at 8 that was talked about on our show. But also kind of aligned with something that I read after the show. And so we'll bring an audio mixed bag takeaway of something going on as it relates to our Portland Trailblazers at 8 a.m. today. But sticking in the world of college football, obviously kick times are a big deal. They're really getting people hot and bothered. Some people complain about night kicks and, oh, it's unfair. We got to do this game and that game. We've got one athletic director, Hunter Yurecek. Now, that name might sound familiar. He was the guy representing the College Football Playoff Committee last year.
Yes.
He is from, he's the AD at Arkansas.
Arkansas.
And he wrote a big lengthy post because their kick times got announced. And Hunter Yurecek said, I am extremely concerned and displeased about the recently released kickoff times for our football program in consecutive weeks this September. And the impact it has on the well-being of our student-athletes. ESPN has set our game at Utah for 9:15 p.m. Central Time on September 12th. We anticipate returning to campus at approximately 6 a.m. on Sunday, September 13th, followed by an 11 a.m. home kickoff against Georgia 6 days later on September 19th. The assigned schedule will cost our student athletes nearly a full day of rest and recovery that they would otherwise have available to them. This is not simply a competitive disadvantage. It is a genuine welfare issue for the young men who represent our program and contribute greatly to the bottom line of our television partners. Someone call CPA on the schedule makers at ESPN. How dare they do this to Arkansas? Is he new to college football?
I don't know what.
Do you know how many schools this happens to?
You want to
tell Washington?
You
want to
call
like
Cal
Rutgers?
And Stanford?
Yeah, who have to go to like Miami, and then the next week they're like hosting an ACC game. Like, Do you want to talk to all
the
other
ACC will play on Thursday nights in, yeah.
It's ridiculous. I do feel bad for the student athletes. It's been going on for a long time.
Well, my first question is, when do classes actually start in Arkansas?
They might be in early.
Do they start early?
Yeah.
So if they have classes and that's actually, you know, something that's important to the program.
Let's see.
Okay.
Yeah, this says August 24th, classes in Arkansas.
So they start early.
Yeah. All right. Usually, I think most universities outside of our window are kind of late.
Yeah, Oregon State have notoriously always started late in September.
As a former student, I loved it. I'd be done in early, mid-June, and I wouldn't be back till almost October.
Yeah, see, so, and it's funny because a lot of the smaller private schools like Linfield, UPS was this way.
Yep.
We'll start at the end of August
yep.
and be done
May
before Memorial Day.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I hear what he's saying. He's not wrong to point some of this out, but as Sankey, because Sankey was asked about this, as it was pointed out, like, part of our contract agreement is allowing the networks to make the schedule.
You want to know why your school gets $85 million?
Yeah, dude. You want $100 million every year? Well, ESPN is going to have a say in some of this. So, is it great? No, but this is what's been going on for a long time.
And I will also say, let's calm down compared to some of the other sports that play multiple times per week and maybe don't fly charter and all of those things.
He added at the end of, because he wrote a whole big thing and then posted, right, the letter. He added this, I formally requested that the SEC office and ESPN aggressively pursue an alternate solution for one or both kick times during the consecutive weeks. The focus must be on the well-being of the game's participant, not the bottom line of our media partner. To which, if I'm ESPN, I'm responding, thank you, Hunter, for your feedback. We pay you $90 million. Shut up. Sincerely, ESPN. Like, come on, man. I just thought that was ridiculous. Greg Sankey is in the news. Again, because we've got SEC spring
media. So SEC coaches meetings going on somewhere in a coastal locale of Florida.
I'm a very big fan that this is becoming a thing now. As a radio host who loves college football, I like that we're basically getting two media days now.
Yes.
So this is great in my opinion. And you don't have to agree with everything these guys are saying from any of the conferences. But Greg Sankey at yesterday's SEC coaches media gathering was basically asked, what's wrong with you guys? Why does the Big Ten own you? And you could tell he was ready, because take a listen to how he defends the SEC still being the best.
And let's go back to the Peach Bowl. Was it January 1st, 2022? Kick the field goal sales left. Georgia wins. We're great. The margins are so thin. So Michigan beat Alabama in the Rose Bowl in overtime. Last year, you look at the Texas-Ohio State game. Texas scores. There's a screenplay. Breaks the game open. You go to possessions in the red zone really close, and there's a turnover. And I use those. And this year, the ball's in the air. Ole Miss, Miami. I'm standing in the end zone. Pretty good grab. That wasn't a Hail Mary. That was an attempt to score a touchdown on the last play. I mean, those are small margins between winning and losing. We prevailed on those small margins a number of times. You think about the onside kick in Phoenix in 2016 against Clemson. You kind of go down the line. We had some blowouts. If you look at the entirety of our league, we are by far the most competitive, the strongest football league, by far. But you're going to lose games when it's close and competitive like that. So why have they surpassed us? It's an oddball that's bounced a couple times the wrong way. Indiana was pretty dominant in the Rose Bowl last year. A lot of other games, you look pretty close margin, and we've been the beneficiary on those.
So who wrote out all of these examples that he could cite? Like, I'm not saying he does. I think Greg Sankey knows ball. I think Greg Sankey watches and follows,
yes,
obviously. But somebody was like, hey, you might get dealt this question because the Big Ten's won three straight national championships. And I believe over the course of the last 2 years, they're 4-0 against the SEC. If I read that correctly.
In the playoff?
I believe that's the case, yes.
Okay.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Clearly, he was ready for this question. Now, let me ask you this. Do you agree with him? Are they still the best conference despite not winning a title for three straight years?
No, I think the middle of their conference And this is why I'm glad they are going to 9 conference games. They are going to play a 10th against another power school.
Same.
I think a lot of their records and a lot of their rankings and ratings and metrics are all trumped up by their traditionally soft non-conference schedules. They'll point to one big game, but if you look at the other three, a lot of tissue paper going on there. I want to see when they have to go week in, week out with the attrition that some of the other conferences, the ACC and the Big Ten, go through, because they need a little extra high-profile game in a non-conference or whatever. I think the middle of their conference is just as soft as the Big Ten. Match them up.
I think you're kind of right on that. Now, what I would say is, like, if you think from top to bottom the SEC is better, that's fine. But on your point there, though, the middle of it.
Yeah.
Much like the way we're talking about the Spurs-Thunder series, like where it's the Thunder win. Oh, yeah, the Thunder won. What's wrong with Wemby? And then the Spurs win. Oh, my, he's Hercules, right? I kind of think this is what happens in college football between these two conferences, because when you mention Swag, if you say Minnesota to a college football fan,
yeah,
what are they thinking? Minnesota?
Minnesota, what?
Okay, all right.
Are they rowing the boat? Which way are they rowing the boat?
Exactly. It's like, what's the big deal there? If I was to give you the SEC and I said
Tennessee?
Kentucky.
Kentucky.
What are you thinking? Auburn.
Yeah.
You're probably thinking higher than what they really are. Now, Auburn is a good example because they've won a title, right? Obviously, Minnesota probably won't ever win a title. My point is, like, when these teams are not high-end, they somehow still get a reputation, I think, in people's brains to say, Auburn? Auburn's great. They were 1-7 in SEC play last year.
Yeah.
1-7.
Well, but I also think this is where it comes, the perception also comes down to, the SEC still gets more players, I think, across all of their schools.
Ooh, maybe that's
drafted.
The case. Let me look this up, because I almost did this as a topic.
Because I think the Big Ten's right there with them, but like, how many come from Ohio State and Michigan and Oregon and USC versus up and down the entire conference?
So this says, give me a second here. Okay, so I believe in the early rounds it was more Big Ten, but overall,
how much
the SEC
of that was
won.
Ohio State and Oregon? And
Ohio State had what, like
five in the first round?
It
or
was
whatever.
Crazy what Ohio State had.
But if you look at the number of schools in the SEC that gets guys drafted, and how many of them each have like two or three?
Yeah, the Big Ten ended the SEC's 19-year run of dominance over the first round in 2026. So the SEC has just been a juggernaut in that regard.
Yeah.
And not that that's the end-all be-all. I still think you take overall who had the most players drafted from top to bottom, the SEC. So maybe to a certain extent, Sankey I don't think is really far-fetched to suggest the conference from top to bottom. But you
the
also,
very,
what would
The
would
very
Sankey,
bottom of the Big Ten is awful.
It is. But why do we not say that about the what's Mississippi State to people?
Well, there's two less teams in the SEC.
Well, okay, yeah, all right, there's that. But they also brought in, what, 4 new teams with UCLA, USC,
yeah.
Oregon, Washington?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's funny how the bottom of one conference is terrible, and I'm not refuting that. The bottom of the SEC, you know, South Carolina next year, maybe they should be in the top 15 preseason. Like,
yeah.
That's how they get kind of viewed. And we'll have to kind of wait and see on it.
And that's why there's been discussions of setting something up, SEC and Big Ten, and a scheduling thing. And that's why I wish they would do it the way they do in basketball. I think it would be if they did it all on one Saturday or one weekend.
But he's holding on a top-to-bottom argument, right? If Greg Sankey had the reverse happening, where let's say the Big Ten had lost 3 straight national championships and the SEC had won those – do you think asked that question? If he is, what's he saying? He says, well, maybe a top-to-bottom argument is something you point out. We don't do that. We pride ourselves on being the best.
We win championships.
We win championships.
Yeah.
I think the same could be said for the Big Ten. Like, even in the NFL draft, as an example of this, the Big Ten last year, the SEC had 7 first-round selections in the first round. It's their lowest since 2015.
Yeah.
So, like, is the bottom of the SEC better than the bottom of the Big Ten? I guess if
I
you want to
so.
Hold on to that, you can. That's whatever.
I think
we're talking about the cream of the crop here.
Yeah.
And right now it's the Big Ten, dude.
Yep.
So defend it however you want to defend it. The Big Ten is taking your cookies.
And the Big Ten did it with three different teams. It wasn't Ohio State. It wasn't the same team.
No, it's Michigan, Ohio State, and Indiana.
And Indiana.
Yeah, so it's not one team. For how many years did Saban?
Exactly.
Saban, right? So I'm enjoying watching. The SEC still has all of the pageantry and hype.
They're feeling it behind
the
scenes.
They are. You can tell they are. He doesn't go to and the onside kick in 2016, like 10 years ago, an onside kick reference?
Yeah, exactly.
You can tell they're kind of like folding themselves into convincing themselves, well, we're actually – dude, give them their credit. They won three straight national championships. The top of that conference, I think, is better than the top of your conference. You got to go earn it. And you wouldn't be doing all this defense stuff if you had won three straight and they were trying to say a similar argument. So really funny to listen to some of the big names, I think, in the sport try to pretzel the way we're still the best, even though we haven't been actually technically the best for three straight years. A lot more to get into. Something interesting I observed and something that we heard on the show that I'm going to bring you at 8 a.m. It's a Magic Hat Thursday. Dirt and Sprague back with more on 105.1 The Fan. Is this actually the summer to do something big in Portland? And does the history of the league for largely most of our lives suggest that indeed it is? Contrary to one opinion we heard on the show yesterday, how active and aggressive should our Trailblazers be this summer? We'll talk about that coming up at 8 a.m. Read something yesterday that was very interesting. And as you may remember, we had Ben Golliver on of ESPN. And he gave us his thoughts on the current state of the Trailblazers, Tommy Two Nichols, and how he views the offseason for our beloved Blazers. We'll get into that coming up at 8. It's a Magic Hat Thursday. We'll get to that at 9. Brady Henderson's going to join us coming up at 9:30. So I'm looking forward to all the other narrative-based stuff as we wind down of some of these spring media availability things in college football. We kind of have to wait. I said this before, and I think it's going to happen again. Usually you get a Lanning bussing with the boys type interview. I think we're going to get that again. I know we've had a couple. I watched Yogi's. I thought that was really good. I watched George Reister's. I thought that was good. But, you know, when he gets on with some of the more the slightly bigger national name guys in the sphere, he kind of tends to let loose a little more. And so I think we're going to get some more response from guys like Lanning as the offseason goes on before we get to fall camp. So college football is never a dull. It's year-long now, and they've done a good job of building it up that way. Random baseball segment here, Swag, I wanted to throw at you because I want to give you credit. You said pretty confidently Mariners were going to handle the A's, and they did. What was the final? Was that 5-1 was the final?
9-1.
9-1, thank you. I kept following it because I can't watch the Mariner games. And it was 5-1 at one point, and so I was like, okay, that game's basically over. They won 9-1. With that win, we noted the AL West being entirely under 500 yesterday. With that win yesterday, the Mariners are only now one game under 500, but first place.
They're in first place.
First place, Habs.
Yep.
They're a plus 24 run differential. It's far and away the best one in that division. You got the Rangers who are in third, and they're two games back. They're a minus one. The A's who are in second are a minus 25. And then you've got Astros minus 41 and the Angels at a minus 62. So not a great start. Shaky, you know, beginning of the year for a couple of the big names of the Mariners. They've been some weird things. Did you see that Castillo? He was rolling the other day. He had like six innings pitched. Mm-hmm. Wilson took him out. Or maybe it was seven innings. He was rolling. Took him out, brought in another pitcher because they have six starters, not five. And he basically had to be talked to by Dan Wilson on the bench. He was pissed off, dude. He's like, dude, I'm rolling right now. What are you doing? And so very interesting little start to their season. All of that being said, they're in first place.
Yeah.
Because their division sucks.
Their division sucks.
It's pretty bad. So no panic. We've been saying that the whole time. You know, Jordan Schultz is still wearing his Mariner thong.
That's right.
There was
They've
never
called
a reason
up
to
Colt
freak out.
Emerson. He's playing at third. Donovan's hurt.
He accomplished the hitting cycle Was it 29, 30 games in his career?
He hit a home run in his debut.
It was his first hit?
Yeah.
So he's had a triple, single, double, and home run now. I think he's hitting in the 240 to 245 range, if I'm not mistaken.
Let's see.
So it's not been awful for him. It's been a nice little start to his career in the call-up, and they're in first place now. Sticking in their division. Now, this is something I've been following for over a week, and I've been reading about it because I don't want to watch the team. The Angels have been pretty terrible.
They're awful.
Like, they won the World Series somehow in 02. I would say outside of that, my entire life, they have sucked.
Yeah.
Okay? I don't care if you made the playoffs one time with Mike Trout. You got swept. It didn't really matter. They're terrible. The funny thing is their owner is notoriously, like, awful. He had an interview this past offseason.
Artie Moreno.
And he did an interview, and he came out, and you may remember these quotes. He was like, something to the effect of, paraphrasing, fans don't care about winning. Fans care about the experience. Well, and you may think this is a joke, the Angels fans that do exist, they are calling this out now. I don't know if you've observed this. So down in Anaheim at home games, you know the wave of take your top off at losing games?
Yeah, the tarps off has gotten out of control now. It's all over the place.
It started with a bunch of losing teams and fans doing it as a jokey thing to the winning teams fans started doing this.
There was a group of Cardinals fans. I think it was Cardinals fans. And the manager, Carlos Marmol, what's Ollie's name? Anyway, the manager of the Cardinals invited, like, the group leaders in and met the team one day, and that got a whole bunch of viral stuff going.
That's great.
And now I can't turn on an MLB game. You get into the seventh inning, and there's some section
there's always a section.
And all of a sudden there's 40 dudes with their shirts off, and 39 of them should not have their shirts off.
I mean, it's becoming a little bit of a culty sports fan bro thing but whatever. They're having a good time out there. I think it's gone a little far. Whatever. Anyways, they're doing this at Angels games now, except they're not doing it just to be bro-y, and they're doing it as a protest. They have signs in this section, and they're chanting things like, sell the team, sell the team. And it's gotten so loud because these Angel games are empty.
They're empty, yeah.
Unless the Dodgers are there
and all the Dodger fans show
up, or the Padres fans show up. Yeah, if there's a blue blood of baseball in town, they'll show up from the opposing. But for home games, when it's Angels and Rangers.
Angels and Royals.
Nobody's at this game. And so these people have collectively started these chants, so much so that, like, the media following and at the games.
Starting to interview them.
They've asked the players, and they're like, are you hearing it? And they're like, yeah, we're hearing it. I don't know what to do about it. The manager has completely ignored the questions. I don't know what their manager's name is.
I don't know who's managing.
I think, wasn't Ron Washington the manager there? And then he left with an ill.
He
had cancer.
Where are they?
And they had to replaced him. Anyways, he's been asked about it, and he was like, fans are going to be fans. And he won't, like, answer it. They're at least taking it a step further in Anaheim, and they're actually starting to, like, try to put pressure on Moreno to sell the team. Now, I don't know if that's going to work in any way. It's just something very interesting to observe from afar. Like, hey, Angels fans are starting to care a little bit to the point of calling out this crappy-ass owner who, frankly, guys like this don't deserve to own a sports franchise.
No. Kurt Suzuki is the current manager of the Angels.
Kurt Suzuki.
Athletics catcher is where I remember him.
There you go, Kurt Suzuki. So he's been avoiding the question, but it's happening down in Anaheim, the pressure cooker of sell the team for Artie Moreno.
He doesn't want to get fired, so he doesn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole.
There's no doubt about that. The first-place team in the AL East, you aware who it is?
Have the Rays overtaken the Yankees?
The Rays, well, I think they overtook them. It's kind of been a back-and-forth battle. They're a game and a half up right now.
Yeah.
So I looked this stat up because I saw a blurb about the Rays and how the Rays are trying to fundamentally zig while Major League Baseball for almost a decade
has they're trying to play small ball, steal bases, bunt, do all that.
They're not trying.
They're doing it, and they're creating havoc, and all these pitchers don't know what to do with it.
So they have a plus 24 run differential. They are third to last in the bigs in home runs hit.
Yeah.
This is literally a small ball.
And that's a home run little dome, too.
Absolutely.
Not like it's a cavernous stadium.
They're just trying to chop the ball and get the ball into the outfield to get on base. They're going back to small ball. And a lot of baseball fans, even if they're not watching the Rays games, are basically saying, this is great. Now, they lost yesterday. They're a game and a half up on the Yanks, but nobody had the Rays as a first-place team this year. And they're doing it, thankfully, because they're bringing back what the Oakland Athletics once did of just get a guy on base.
Yeah.
Let's not think about launch angle and velocity, exit velocity. It's just take get the bat on the ball.
If they're going to give you first base, take first base.
Work the count. Have good pitching. That's their entire MO. So it's very interesting to watch from afar. I'm not diving into
race
stuff.
Well, there were some that thought more teams were going to do this when they initiated the rule changes a few years ago with the bigger bases and the pitch count or the pitch clock.
Nobody's doing it like them.
No.
Nobody's doing it like them, especially in that division with those power hitters. It's been pretty impressive. So a couple baseball notes and observations of what's going on in Major League Baseball that I've been kind of following. I didn't want to talk about the Braves losing 8-0 to the Boston Red Sox yesterday. That wasn't great. That kind of hurt.
Did they take the series, though?
I think they have a game today.
Oh, okay.
I think the getaway day is today because they won the first game 7-6. They lost yesterday 8-0.
Yes, 1-10.
Yeah, 1-10.
You get a little afternoon baseball out there getting your workout in at Arnie's.
Loaded third hour of the radio program. Magic Hat in the fourth, Brady Henderson in the fourth. But coming up in the third hour, is this the time for the Blazers to strike? Do you want them to be aggressive or is the new owner making nervous? A little history on this. We kick off the third hour there. Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 The Fan.